Welcome to Growth Marketing Camp, a podcast powered by OpenSense, where we sit down with leaders and founders from diverse backgrounds in marketing, tech, and beyond to explore what it takes to build a leading brand that's shaping the world of B2B. Let's get into it.
Hey, everybody. This is Jazz Binning, co-host of Growth Marketing Camp. Welcome to our Founder Stories episode, where I'm stoked to welcome William Balance, CEO and co-founder at Lavender. Will, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, I just want to give a huge shout out to the incredible Todd Clauser for introducing us to you and for helping make this interview happen. We're super, super grateful to you, Todd. You might be the worst marketer in the world, but our team absolutely loves and appreciates you. By the way, y'all, if you haven't already done it, check out episode 44 where Todd was a guest. It's definitely a good one.
Todd's great.
So, Will, I wanted to focus most of our conversation on what you guys are doing at Lavender, because I don't think a lot of, especially SaaS marketers, need an intro anymore. When I think about Lavender, the amount of times you guys have completely been teaming on my feed, I've described it as, if I think about a SaaS company that could start a sitcom, it's you guys. So you guys are like, you guys could start a sitcom, and you're doing a little bit of it from the stuff that I've actually seen on my feed that I'm going to talk a little bit about. But before we actually get into like the fun marketing stuff, talk to me about the origin story of Lavender. How'd you guys start it? Where did this idea come from?
Lavender was a complete accident. And we are so fortunate and lucky that the market received it the way that it did. Because when we started Lavender, we were just 45 days away from complete failure. It was literally February, March of 2020, right when COVID was taking shape. And my team, my co-founders, Will and Casey, we've been working on a similar but different product called Sorter for the past 2 years. So we started that in 2018. And that was essentially a marketing tech product for online brands that would apply communication psychology and personality science to help people optimize their Facebook campaigns or their newsletters. So it would take an audience, it would acquire data on that audience, make a prediction, what type of personality types are they and how do they make their buying decisions? And then based on that, help you adjust your copy to resonate more with them. So for example, if someone was more analytical or data-driven, it would suggest copy that was more informative, that would really satisfy that curiosity within them. So we had a handful of customers for that. We were about to launch for a full go-to-market. We had a pretty healthy pipeline, especially of like enterprise automotive companies. And then we had some really good, well-known brands in direct-to-consumer. And our largest customer was a co-working space based in New York. So when lockdown happened, no one was buying any of those things. You're not buying a new car. You can't go to a co-working space. Like, it was basically illegal. And you really weren't really buying at the time the types of brands that we were working with. And we only had a handful of customers anyway. They were just our early proofs of concepts. And we thought we were for sure going to go out of business. We had maybe 45 days, if that, of runway left in the bank. And we just thought maybe we could do something to make a little bit of money to stay alive for an extra month. We had read in TechCrunch that LinkedIn was shutting down a LinkedIn sales navigator for Gmail, which would show you data from LinkedIn on the people you were emailing. We were already buying data on people to make this personality prediction. So we thought, fun weekend project, let's just put that in the inbox and combine the writing analysis tech we've been building for marketers and just kind of see what happens. We thought we could maybe make like $15,000 and stay alive a little bit longer. Really early on, a VC had told us that that would never be worth more than like $15 million maximum. And it wasn't really worth pivoting toward. So we didn't really have a lot of thought that it was going to be this like big thing that it has become. In many ways, a movement and valuation definitely way excess of $15 million at this point. But what happened was we launched that very first version in like late May of 2020. And one of our first users was someone that was an investor, and they wrote back and they said, I've been using Lavender on about a third of my inbox. I think it's really sticky. And I'm going to fund a pivot for you if you'll do it. I'll invest $75,000 and that'll fund you for about 3 months, like see how far you can get. And at the time, there were no other options, honestly. We thought this could be something, but it was also like middle of COVID. No one was buying marketing software and we had no other options. So we took that deal and we hired our first engineer. We built up a little team And we started building like Lavender version one. And during that summer, we call it like the summer sprint. We had 3 months to really make it happen or we're going to completely fail. And during that summer, we realized that salespeople were really the key market that had a need. They had budget. They had to figure out how to sell in this COVID world where no one's in the office and they're so used to getting phone calls or doing phone calls and getting phone numbers. And now they don't have any of that. They're now doing written selling. Immediately after COVID, 16% more sales emails are being sent, but 8% lower reply rates. So a tool like Lavender, which helps salespeople write better emails faster and double their reply rates and get more positive replies in less time, that was like the perfect product, the perfect time for a really big market need right in the middle of COVID. So we timed all of that, I think, really precisely. And alongside that, it's also when everyone was trying to find a community online, especially in sales, and LinkedIn really evolved into a real social network. And we were really early on there posting on LinkedIn, which was kind of a core of a lot of our marketing, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But that's the origin story of Lavender. It was really just an accident, a need to survive. And fortunately, our very first users really enjoyed it. And that gave us the confidence to keep building it.
Oh, wow. That makes the story even more inspiring. It's COVID was one of the things that killed a lot of businesses, but then it propelled so many forward. Few people that we've already spoken to on the founder stories, they had a very similar story, but I'm not joking when I say like, it almost feels like you guys have been around for much longer, especially to the community that's on LinkedIn because of what you guys have been able to do. And again, the most of the stuff that I've seen and the noise that you guys have made, I'm not an SDR, I'm not an AE, but the salespeople that I do know have definitely heard of you guys. And then marketers, of course, have heard of you guys. And to think that all of that was caused by just really a lot of organic and creative marketing and just your guys' brand or whatever you guys are doing, whether it's accidental or not. For example, I think the recent thing that you probably obviously know is like how many wills you guys have, but how quickly that spun. And that ended up being like every single post for a while where people are just like having fun with it. And that's how you guys ended up on a bunch of other people's feeds. And again, the stuff that it seems like you guys have a lot of wonderful and serendipitous moments that have led to your success. And hearing the origin story obviously is wonderful. And it's cool that, so you mentioned the other two co-founders, it's yourself, another guy named Will Elred, and then Casey. And the three of you guys are able to just make the pivot. And now you're doubling down on this. I think I read recently too, and I'm curious now, especially with most of our feeds just being littered with like ChatGPT stuff, if you guys are also now going to incorporate some AI stuff in what you guys are offering.
Yeah, ChatGPT has really taken the internet in a way by storm. We first integrated GPT-3, which is more or less what powers ChatGPT. When ChatGPT went live, it was powered by GPT-3.5. And now in its newest version, it's by GPT-4. But until recently, GPT-3 was the most recent publicly available version. We've been using that since 2021. So we actually launched a tool that uses AI to write emails off of a few bullet points and all of the suggestions that Lavender gives. Like, for example, if your sentence is going to cause your email to get a lower reply rate, we'll suggest new sentences. Or if you're trying to personalize an email, we'll pull in news on your recipient and we'll suggest personalized intros. That's all powered by what the public is calling ChatGPT. But the transformer AI models that power ChatGPT, those are the same ones that we use within Lavender. We've been using them for now over 2 years.
Yeah, got it. Yelena, she's our podcast producer, marketing manager. She actually won a recent giveaway. So she's going to be the first OpenSense user of Lavender.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to be testing it out here. But that's absolutely wonderful. So your guys' target audience still is AEs and SDRs. Those are the power users of Lavender right now.
We think of sales much more broadly than that. Like any sort of email that you're trying to get someone to take a positive action off of should be considered a sale. That could be customer service, trying to enable someone to use your product better and ideally not churn, or customer success, where you're also trying to make people expand or upsell into an organization, or you're trying to find a job and you're selling yourself and your own skill set. We've also offered Lavender for free to job seekers since early 2020. A lot of our first users were job seekers that lost their jobs during COVID. That's a sale. Like any sort of an email where you're trying to get someone to take positive action or persuade them to do something like that is going to be considered a sale email. That said, a lot of our core users are in the traditional, what you would consider a B2B sales environment. They are SDRs and AEs. And we definitely market for that. But people use our product for all sorts of things, for marketing emails, for Facebook campaigns. We had a user who used it to write his Bumble profile. We had a user who used it to write a speech that he gave to the Washington, D.C. City Council. We had users use it because their English is a second language and it helps them write more confidently in English. Or they put in bullet points in their native language and Lavender generates an email in English to get them started. There's like tons and tons of use cases. But as we're thinking about how do we bring a message to the market that's easy to understand and say Lavender does X, we started with the SDRs because generally they're the ones that are new to the job, maybe their first job, or maybe they're a year into their career. And they have to unlearn a lot of bad habits when it comes to professional writing. A lot of times they mimic what they were taught in school, which was typically to write these long, complicated, really formal types of writing. And in many cases, you're trying to hit a word count for your professor or your teacher. So you're saying things intentionally longer than you probably need to. And while Lavender does lots of things, one of the things that it really helps most users with is to write more succinctly and more clearly. That's by far the biggest problem most writers have, is they use two words when one will suffice, if you will. So Lavender helps with that a lot. And that's really why we targeted a lot of our messaging to SDRs originally, because they're the ones newest in their career that actually need the most help. And our tool helps them. But AEs use our product, sales managers use our product, customer success reps use our product, marketers use our product, job seekers use our product. It's across the board. But from our messaging, it is mostly toward SDRs and AEs.
Got it. Yeah, no, it totally makes sense to start the first set on the clearest use case. And then you realize that there's so many other valuable use cases. You guys started on, correct me if I'm wrong, on email. Was that your main, the main channel that you could use Lavender on? You mentioned some people use it to build out your Bumble profile. How are they doing that? I know there's obviously people will find creative ways to make things work. Yeah. So that's hilarious. And I'm sure that you guys should totally publish a commercial on that or something on one of the LinkedIn commercials. But where are people?
Yeah.
Does Lavender mostly reside on email?
Yeah. So we do not integrate with Bumble. That guy, he wrote it in Gmail and then just like copy and paste it, or I guess retyped it on his phone into the Bumble. Yeah. Lavender works in a lot of places. We natively integrate into Gmail, Outlook in the web, and a version for Outlook on the desktop coming this quarter. Outreach and Salesloft, which are both sales engagement platforms. And then outside of that, we have a version called Lavender Anywhere, which sits on top of platforms that we don't natively integrate into, like MailChimp, LinkedIn, Twitter, HubSpot, Salesforce, and dozens of others. So we use a lot of places, but we primarily focus in the inbox. It's an in-inbox email coach and email assistant that watches what our user is typing, whether it's a net new email that they're writing from scratch or a template that they're editing off of. And we see what about that email based on their data or their team's data is going to hurt their chance of a reply. And then we use GPT or other AI models to help them fix that email. So it's definitely optimized for email. But I think outside of what you think of as general email, LinkedIn messaging, Twitter DMs, these are electronic mail in a different form than what you normally think of as email, but it works as effectively there. And then people use it for other things too. Like if you're writing it to do your Facebook ads, for example, you could totally do that. A lot of the things Lavender scores for would help you write a better ad, but we don't integrate with Facebook ads. So you would copy and paste from a different platform. Yeah. And we give you a score 0 to 100. And that score is for sure optimized around what works in traditional email. But you can kind of use your own judgment and reasoning. And say, for example, if you're writing a blog, you could use Lavender to make your sentences more impactful. But we're going to for sure penalize you for length. You might want to ignore that if you're using Lavender for an unadvertised use case. But a lot of things apply. Writing with great tones, writing clearly, et cetera. Lavender's perfect for that.
Okay, amazing. It's kind of very similar to OpenSense, actually. So we are an email signature company, but most of our use cases. So when someone says, who's your guys' main persona? Initially, it is marketers, but any B2B company that uses email. And just like what you guys mentioned, if you use email and you're trying to make some sort of a positive impact, whether it's to upsell or cross-sell, or if you're servicing a customer, if you're doing a technical, if you're troubleshooting an issue, or if it's a salesperson trying to get, you know, their buyer's attention, use cases are across the board. And then you obviously get some fun stories that you guys can use for marketing. This Bumble one.
Totally.
Someone. No, I love that.
Yeah.
What differentiates you guys from some of your competitors? What's the biggest reason why people are coming to Lavender?
I think one of the biggest things that we've led with ever since we first implemented AI in our software back in 2021 was that we're not really there to replace the seller. A lot of people are building software right now, and their approach is to use GPT-3 or now GPT-4, ChatGPT, to automate the writing of emails for their users. And when we built Lavender, we looked at this from a different perspective. A lot of times in sales technology, people are trying to optimize the experience of the seller, make them more efficient, more productive. And we consider these things, but we consider their reader first. What's the kind of email that a reader wants to read and then wants to respond to? And if you optimize for the reader first and the seller second, our user second, which sounds kind of counterintuitive for a product company to say that we're prioritizing our user second, but if their reader has a great experience, then our user, the seller, is going to have a great experience. They're going to get the sale or have a higher chance of getting the sale, which equals more commission and so on and so forth. So that's the biggest thing that we've really led with, is we're not trying to replace them, but we're trying to empower them. Where other companies are using GPT models, which stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, which is a fancy way of saying, take ChatGPT, it generates text. They're using that to create emails completely from scratch and automatically, and in some cases, create entire sequences of emails automatically. And we don't find that to be too dissimilar than current types of automation, where companies put in a template and they hit send and they can send the same thing to thousands of people. And in our opinion, if you have AI writing emails for you and it's plugged into, say, an automation tool, and now you have an automation tool automatically sending hundreds or thousands of emails that were generated by AI, to us, that feels really close to spam. And it could actually be spam, where we think of a different way, that we think of the AI as like a symbiotic assistant to our user. So we sit in their current workflow. We don't fully replace them. If they're stuck and they're not sure what to say and they have writer's block, we can use AI to get them started. But a lot of the times our users are writing their own emails, and then they use Lavender to figure out based on their own data. And for some companies, that could be millions or hundreds of thousands of data points in their previous emails, far more data than any SDR could potentially analyze on their own. We look and see, like, these are the specific things for your specific team that work the best. And a lot of times those best practices that one team has, they probably apply to a lot of other teams as well, but not always. For most people, most companies, a 2-3 word subject line performs best. We have one company where like an 8 word subject line performs best for them for whatever reason. And it's hard for an individual SDR to understand that nuance in their organization. They'd probably assume that they're going to be like most other companies and follow the 2-3 word subject line pattern. But we're able to analyze all of their historic emails and figure out that's not the case for them. And instead of just replacing them, we give them the tools that they need to just write a better email faster without fully replacing their job.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned a couple of things that I just want to touch on. Number one, I think this may have been the first time I've heard of a company that, just like you mentioned, does not focus on the success of the user. Indirectly, the user will be actually directly, the user will succeed. Yeah. If you focus on helping, you know, their end goal, which is the only reason anyone would adopt a tool like Lavender or OpenSense or HubSpot, it's really just to make sales and to keep their business alive. So I absolutely love that. Second thing that you mentioned, I'm noticing a lot of people, and there's been a little bit of chatter on social as well about ChatGPT or any of these AI tools that are just making people's lives easier, whether it's, hey, I can just get a blog post. I don't have to really use my brain. I can get a couple of inputs. It'll basically produce the blog for me or the email, copy and paste. Again, it's almost like a crutch instead of what you guys are doing, where you're giving the salespeople or whoever is writing that email the opportunity to, they're in almost micro moments, to coach them so that they have someone who's actually helps them understand and learn and optimize the work they're doing versus doing it for them and doing it in the best possible way for their use case. Whether it, you just mentioned right now, some companies, they 2 to 3 word subject line is better. Some companies an 8 word. So it's almost like the most personalized coach that you could have right there in your inbox. And I think those two could be the reason why you guys have been so successful and are going to be more successful versus having someone else reduce your team's ability to think for themselves. You guys are helping the company succeed and enabling the teams and supporting them, which I find absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I think something you mentioned there is really interesting, like I'd like to touch on, especially if your audience, or since your audience is a lot of marketers, and they might want to fall into this trap with ChatGPT. By the way, I'm one of the biggest advocates of ChatGPT. This is no way to hate on ChatGPT or GPT models. We use them. They're essential to our product. And I love how far they're coming, how fast they're progressing. I think it's monumentally world-changing technology, but they're not perfect. They get a lot of things wrong. I published a post about ChatGPT getting the CEO of OpenAI, the creator of ChatGPT, wrong. It had that data wrong. So it makes a lot of mistakes. I did another post where I had it run a math calculation around different dollar amounts, just because I thought it'd be quicker than me pulling a calculator out. And it was off by over $50,000. So if you're relying on ChatGPT to do your job for you, it hallucinates a lot, meaning it creates things. And that's part of its beauty, is that it's able to create things on its own. But those things aren't always correct. And it's definitely technology that has the ability to 10x you if you're using it correctly. But if you're like just a 1x employee, then maybe it makes you a 10x employee. But if you're already a 10x employee, it's going to make you a 100x employee. So the AI is just a tool. And really, whoever's wielding that tool is going to be more or less successful based on how they're using that tool. So I'd say keep that in mind, that it's not, if everyone has it, it's not going to make you more productive or more effective than someone next to you if you're not really getting in the weeds of it. Secondarily, if everyone's putting out this AI generated copy, there's an interest in the search engines, in the spam filters, et cetera, to begin filtering them out. OpenAI, who's created ChatGPT, they've put out an API for developers that's made to detect AI written copy. So now other platforms are building tools to say the text that you're reading was written by AI. I've seen reports that Google has started to de-rank or lower the rankings of blog posts that have been written by AI, and they're favoring blog posts that have been written by humans. So I kind of foresee an upcoming battle, if you will, people trying to filter or detect the AI, then the AI trying to get around to those filters. But I do think that there's going to be a short period of time where you could just use ChatGPT to crank out a bunch of blogs, and that's going to seem okay. But there's going to be a point in time where people are going to realize this seems very similar to other AI written copy I've seen, or they're going to have something in their browser that said what you're reading was not written by a human, and it's going to lower the effectiveness of that copy because it's going to come from the machine.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the other things that I think a lot of people fail to realize, especially if you're in sales or you're an AE, you've got moments that only you are aware of based off of the research you have done on that person, right? Whether it was a conversation you had at an event. And, you know, for you to take all of these inputs that you have gathered from these people that you're interacting with, the personal stuff that actually gets them to pay attention to you, that stuff, no AI in the world will know that. It just comes from your own personal experience, your own relationships that you're building. And I think that's the main thing you guys are doing is, and a lot of the work that you guys have done, it's because the reason why you're even successful, I think, beyond your tool is also how much you guys invest in the people and relationships and the teams. Again, focusing less on the user. How can we make that user successful? Let's go after what makes their user, right? So a lot of that is you guys are thinking 2 steps ahead. I want to now just shift gears a little bit and focus on the noise you guys have been making in your marketing, how you guys have just captured, in my world, like all of LinkedIn, because I just keep seeing purple. I want to first talk about, you mentioned that you guys went from having like your first user, which was your investor, to opening up. I mean, you found this opportunity where there were a bunch of layoffs that happened because of COVID. And we continue to see a lot of those layoffs, but you offered this as free to jobs. Is that how you guys were able to go? You really just almost 10x your guys' growth in the beginning. Is that the first campaign, or did you guys have other things in mind when you first started getting users?
First of all, I'm glad that you're seeing a lot of purple on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
It means it's working. So Lavender is free for job seekers, for students, and for entrepreneurs. for job seekers until they find their first job or find a job, their next job. For students, they find their first job, and for entrepreneurs, they get to their first revenue. And we've been doing that since the very beginning. And as a side note, for people who like truly can't afford Lavender, they're able to just email us and we'll happily give them an extended trial for a few months until they get back on their feet. Even if they do have a job, we try to be very flexible with that. If you think Lavender could help you and the $29 price point is the wall between you and success, like we're happy to get you on the product, get you going for as long as you need. For job seekers, we start typically around 3 months, and then we can always expand it if they're still looking for a job. But hopefully in that first quarter, they're able to land a job with our product. And it's happened over and over and over again. But going back to when we first did that, a lot of our first users came from the Airbnb list. So when during COVID, Airbnb put a list out saying that here are people who work at Airbnb that were laid off and are open to recruiters or hiring managers to email them. So my co-founder, Will, he essentially manually emailed all of them or LinkedIn DM'd all of them and said, we're building this tool that helps people write more effective emails. Do you want to try it? It's free for job seekers. And I wouldn't say that helped us like 10x our user base, although maybe it did when you only had 10 users to begin with and you're getting to 100, 10x is not necessarily the hard part, but we didn't really like over-optimize for job seekers. It's just something that we did in the very beginning because we thought it would help them. And we thought, we weren't really sure who Lavender is for. We didn't build Lavender originally for salespeople. One of our first websites said Lavender is for customer success, for executive assistants, for salespeople, for managers, for entrepreneurs. Like there is all these different use cases on the website. We weren't really sure who the best user was, but we definitely knew it helped people write more effectively. And right then in Q1, Q2, 2020, people trying to find jobs, it's a big amount of people that we just knew we could help. How we actually found our ICP though was we literally cold called HR departments, marketing departments, customer success, customer service, and sales departments at a whole host of organizations from enterprise down to SMB. The connect rate was quite low because most people were not in the office, but we got enough data to show that there was an appetite in sales. And then one of our really early users, a guy named Nick Bennett, he somehow found Lavender, I think through a Slack group he was in. And then he posted about it on LinkedIn and said, attention all my sales friends, you should look into Lavender. So we thought, interesting, the cold calls we're making are showing that sales is going to likely be a good ICP for us. This guy, Nick, he posted about us on LinkedIn and a bunch of other salespeople are now installing our product and they're also posting about it. That's really interesting. Why are these people posting about our product on their own feeds on LinkedIn? We should probably pay more attention to that. And that was really the genesis of how we got on LinkedIn to begin with, how we started building for salespeople, and why we thought salespeople maybe by default were going to be a more viral audience. Maybe they're more extroverted. And on average, on all of them, they were by default going to LinkedIn. They're all migrating there. They needed things to post about. This new tool that helps them in their remote first job was something that was pretty top of mind in the moment. And it just created that early feedback loop of people hearing about Lavender, trying Lavender, then posting about Lavender, and then more people hearing about it, trying it and posting it. So we started building more features around that sales use case. I had come from sales and there were things that I had done that were pretty inefficient, but really effective. For example, mobile optimization. For marketers out there, you've had mobile preview in MailChimp or Marketo and things like that for forever. Like it's not uncommon in email marketing, but no one ever put a mobile preview in the inbox for one-to-one emails. So we put a phone preview in the inbox for one-to-one emails. And that was because when I was a sales rep, I knew that my reader was likely going to be on their phone when they got my email. So I would write my email on my computer, and I would send it to myself on my phone, see how it looked, edit it, rinse and repeat and do that again. It took a lot of time, but I had a higher reply rate than my peers because I was optimizing for where my reader was. And so we started putting more features like that were inspired by the day-to-day life of an SDR. Then we launched it on Product Hunt in December of 2020, and we got number one product of the day and one of the top 20 productivity tools of 2020. And we thought, okay, there's something here. And then all of 2021, we started building a multiplayer experience for sales teams, not just for the individual SDR or the AE. That's how we got into sales, how we got on LinkedIn.
Yeah, awesome. And yeah, shout out to Nick too. He's also part of the sales community. recently in Q1, we started testing out influencer marketing for the first time ever, LinkedIn influencer marketing. Why? Mm-hmm. Because when there's people that we trust who are talking, obviously sharing their positives about a software, that is where I'm getting most of my feedback from and what I'm going to my team and pitching them. I want this tool. I need this tool. And that's also, I think, the reason why there have been, beyond Nick, I have seen tons of people all over LinkedIn mention Lavender, which again is a reason why my feed is mostly purple. And I think since the new year, whenever that, will the real stand up? So whenever that happened, that basically just ended up completely taking over my feed. Well, like, Yelena, have we gotten someone in Lavender on Growth Marketing Camp? Because we need to have it, because I know every marketer knows who you guys are. So that's absolutely awesome to see. You guys have also gone to other events. I know that there was a point you guys did the Saster event and you made, again, a big splash without even having a booth. Like, talk to me about that. You guys basically, like, wherever you go, you're painting, whether it's offline or online, you're painting the city purple. Like, what's your guys' team look like? I just want to first understand what the Lavender team looks like right now. How big are you guys?
So right now we're 15 people. At Saster, which was in September, we were six.
Wow.
We were six people up until essentially December. And right now it's April. So until just a few months ago, we were just six people. We never raised venture funding. A lot of the things that people know us for, we're really just due to us being really limited in resources and in team and manpower. We were always operating under really intense constraints. We had some angel funding, but we were largely operating off of our revenue. It was kind of a cash in, cash out kind of business. Now we're venture backed. We raised, it's funny, up until October of 2020, we started in 2018. Over the next 4 years, we raised $1 million in total. And it sounds like a lot when you say it at one time, but it was never $1 million at one time. It was me hustling every couple of weeks trying to get $5,000 or $10,000 angel checks to just make payroll. And then from October to December of 2022, we raised over $13 million in venture funding. So it looks a lot different these days than when we were getting this whole motion started. But we started on LinkedIn because we had $0 to acquire users. So free CAC, essentially, by posting on LinkedIn, being helpful on LinkedIn, just giving our content out there, giving our data for free. We've never paid for an influencer. So if someone posts about us on LinkedIn, it's completely organic. It's completely Lavender love. We never pay influencers because we don't want people to think that there's any inauthenticity to what we're doing. People only promote us out of their love for our product or our brand. At Saster, we cannot afford a booth at all. But we had an idea for going around Saster wearing like crazy stuff. We had all this Lavender swag. We had wizard costumes. We had these zebra print shoes. We had big purple Lavender colored away luggage filled with our swag. We made a mixtape. We've launched three EDM songs called It's Lavender Duh. One of our users said It's Lavender Duh in a LinkedIn comment. We memed it and made an April Fool's EDM song. We turned this mixtape, physical mixtape, into an event invitation. You scan this QR code and it gave you an invite to our events at Saster. We threw a happy hour and kind of like hors d'oeuvres for one night, more traditional for the managers and stuff. But we also realized that who's going to a conference like that? It's a lot of young salespeople that are being sent by their company and they want to have fun. And all of the events ended by 9 p.m. So we couldn't afford a booth. We could throw a party. So we threw a rave from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. And when I track back everything, doing that was the spark that got the buzz going around Silicon Valley about Lavender, which is ultimately what led to us raising our Series A funding.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start. First, I'm going to listen to the Spotify. Second of all, oh my God. Like, when you think about taking over an event and what you guys were able to do without actually having a booth, it almost puts to shame the rest of the companies who invest so much in a booth and they just focus on, let me just try to get leads. You guys literally made an impact and you probably were remembered. Also, the rave idea, everything you guys did from the little mixtape and the QR code, inviting them to a dinner, having something a little bit more fun. That is like, I would only go to another event and I would walk away from that event feeling like, hey, that was actually fun because of something like
that. You know, I talked with someone that went to the party And he's the co-founder. I'm not going to call them out here, but he's the co-founder of a multi-billion dollar company. And after our party, I was talking with him. He's like, yeah, I called our CEO and his co-founder. He's like, yeah, we spent $300,000 on our booth, but everyone's talking about Lavender. They didn't have a booth. They threw a rave in an Irish pub, which obviously made no sense. But again, we were resource constrained. We couldn't afford to go to any of the big venues, or they'd already been booked. We didn't even have a venue the day before the party. We announced it as being at a secret location because we were still trying to find a location. And we found this Irish pub, and it just was so random going to a rave in an Irish pub that everyone came. There's really no other options of things to go to that late anyway. And there's a line around the block. You couldn't even get into the party. So we had like clowns on stilts. We had two DJs. We had this artist from Burning Man doing visual artists. We had body painters. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And people had a great time. People are still talking about it. I know people found jobs at that party. They changed their jobs because of it. And it just is one of those things that we reflect back on. It was a pivotal moment in the company. And it's one that we're excited that, though, again, we'll have part two coming this year.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited. And actually, you know, we're working a lot of events too. You actually like make me feel like, damn, right, Jeff is like differently. Because I swear to God, most of the marketers who listen to this is like, no, let's do things differently. Let's do what Lavender did. That's wonderful. That is awesome. I absolutely love you guys. Also, the fact that most events end at 9, I definitely know people and I'm one of them. The moment an event is, the dinner is done, I don't feel like going back. I want to do something. So that is genius. Yeah. To something from like 9 to 1, because there are so many people that want to keep going. Like you're at an event. Most of the teams have flown out. And the last thing you want to do is like, you want to keep it going and focus on building relationships. So I freaking love that.
I'm sure this year people will copy that and there'll be more competition for that time slot. But yeah. we looked at the events, like this is the white space. And it's also more true to our brand.
Oh, like, totally.
Throwing a dinner or a traditional corporate event's not really us, nor could we afford it. So we thought, here's the white space. We understand our user. The salespeople go to conferences, and these are people that are maybe a couple of years out of college. Like they're going to a different state, probably on their company's dime. They want to have fun, and there's nothing else to do. Let's give them that experience. And going back to the note of doing things differently, when I was 17, I read this book. It's the first marketing book I read. It's called Zag by a guy named Marty Neumeier. Definitely recommend it. It has a lot of examples, but to sum it up, it's just like when others zig, zag. So we saw every other company doing traditional corporate conference style events. And we're like, okay, let's do something completely different. That's more true to our brand, more true to what our users are looking for. And we were actually a little discouraged because we walked around talking to the different people at the booths, the managers and things. And they're like, wow, 1 a.m., 9 p.m. Yeah, I can't stay up that late. But I knew even if the managers aren't going, the SDRs and the AEs that are there are going to go. And that's who our users actually are. And that's who we always optimize for. So, and we know if we give the SDR and the AE a great experience, they're going to eventually tell their managers, which was what we saw play out.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And I will make sure we actually include this book in our next recommendation to everybody. So remember the book, Zag. I'm definitely going to pick it up.
That's good.
You've spent a lot of time talking to me about Lavender, and I feel like I can keep this conversation going because I want to learn more, but I want to shift a little bit and just focus on you. You mentioned a lot of stuff, and I know that your career has also pivoted. You've gone from early start in sales, and then you had a bunch of opportunities that actually you were being tested, and you guys are now where you're at, and you see yourself and two other partners. If you could look back, especially when you focus on Lavender, if there was something you could do differently at the beginning when you guys started, what would you do if there was anything that you could change?
I'd go faster. I think from the outside looking in, people, it feels like Lavender got really big really quickly, but it's been 2.5 years of us posting on LinkedIn every single day. And we came to be in such like an interesting time. It was COVID. There's a lot of scarcity and uncertainty in COVID. And there was this big bubble in venture funding after COVID, people getting massive valuations, and we could never raise funding. So every angel check that we received was so important to us. I remember once I was on the phone with one of our angels trying to get an extra $12,000 because we were going to run out of money and not be able to pay our bills for our servers like 8 hours later. So we're on the phone at like 4:30 in the morning. And I think looking back, I would have looked at this from like a state of more abundance and just like, we always thought we're going to figure it out. But I think sometimes we're a little too conservative with how we deployed capital. We could have gone a lot faster in the earlier days. But back then it felt like we were so close to death than we really were, where I think looking back on it, it's the only thing, but it's hindsight's 2020, because I know now it worked out and we're alive and we're Lavender and thousands of people use us every day. But back then we had 150 users and we only had a few thousand dollars to our name. It was a lot. It's easy to say now I should have gone faster and deployed the money faster, but knowing what I know now, I definitely would have done that. And I probably would have built Outlook for the desktop a lot earlier because we get a lot of requests for that, but it'll come out this quarter.
Yeah, wonderful. No, I absolutely love that. What part of the work that you're doing today do you find to be, because I'm sure you're still doing a lot. You're probably still doing actual work for Lavender. You're talking to investors. What part actually are you most passionate about?
I'm passionate about all of it. I'm passionate about entrepreneurship. It's just a thing that really drives me. And I do a lot of talking around this, and people want to be entrepreneurs. Like, lots of people want to be entrepreneurs. And I think they really want it until they get hit in the face of what it actually is. But I always needed to be an entrepreneur. Like, there was no plan B. It was this or be homeless. And that still might be the case. Like, either go all the way or complete failure. And so it's always just been this internal drive. Therefore, I'm passionate about all of it. I think all of it's super exciting. But if I had to think back, I really enjoyed building the brand. Like, the idea of creating a brand from scratch and putting it out into the world and seeing how people respond to it, that has really been motivating to me. But also knowing that alongside that, I wasn't a product designer. And along with our CTO, we were able to build a product that people absolutely loved. Before even Raised Venture, we were a pre-seed company and someone got Lavender tattooed on their arm. And that's just insane to me. Or people that write in and they say Lavender's literally changed their lives because they were about to lose their job for not hitting quota. Or someone wrote in and said, I have OCD and it took me an hour to write every email and now I can do it in a few minutes. And when Lavender gives me an A, I know it's okay to hit send. And people are writing in saying how we're discriminated against in their job, but now they can write more confidently. So like, seeing that something that we've built that's literally changing people's lives all over the world is the most motivating thing for me. And I'm passionate about all of it. I'm passionate about building the brand, the product. But what really drives us is when we hear feedback from the users that has nothing to do with them making more sales typically. It's about how it's freed up all these other things in their lives that are really meaningful to them. Even something as basic as one guy wrote in and he said, because of Lavender, I'm getting through my weekly quota a little bit earlier, and now I can take off every Friday afternoon to play golf, which I really love. So like, even something as simple as that, which I'm sure is helping his stress levels, helping his social life, whatever, it's making his life better. Like, it feels so weird to us to look back on how passionate people feel about a B2B email tool and how connected to the brand that they feel to our tool. They want to talk about us every day. And to know that we've built that brand that people really connect to is something that's really special. I think that's my favorite part of this, but also just seeing how it sounds like so like cheesy entrepreneur to say like, we're changing the world, but it really feels that way because people are having real impact in their lives and are telling the world about it. And the fact that a B2B email tool is doing all of that, it's just so amazing to us. And I think that's what really gets us going.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it's like, I think that's one of the biggest drivers for small teams, especially a team like yours, where I can imagine, I know you just told me it's like 6:43 for you right now. You know, what the stuff that you guys are doing, making things larger than life for people. And these are the stories that probably keep you going. So I absolutely love that. I know you shared, if you could share with other entrepreneurs who are kind of in the similar stage that you guys were before you were propelled to the success that you have now, what's one piece of feedback you would give to them?
I think it's a lot easier said than done, but you really just have to have a lot of resilience and refuse to fail. I think that's the biggest thing. So before I met my co-founder in 2018, I was doing another startup. I'd quit my job in sales 2 years before that in 2016. So for 2 years, I was just scraping by on a different idea. That idea didn't make any money. Like, I had a hard time paying rent, getting groceries. I came so close to having to get a job so many times, but I'd figure it out. I'd make a website for somebody. I'd do some email consulting for someone. Like, I'd just come hours away from failure so many times, but I just couldn't fail. And I just had this mindset that I haven't failed until I quit. And if I don't quit, I have an opportunity to figure it out. I think it's really hard for a lot of people. And I am empathetic that's even harder if people are relying on you. I didn't have a family. I didn't have kids, things like that. And I was able to take this risk. But I know even with Will, my co-founder, whenever things got really, really stressful and we were on the brink of failure, it really messed with us a few times. But we just knew if we just keep our heads down, we can figure it out and things are going to work themselves out. And they always did. Now, I'm hoping they still do, because I know we have lots of hard times likely ahead, as any company does. But that's what kept us going so far. It's just like this complete drive that we have to figure it out and we're refusing to fail. And I think that resiliency and that drive is really a big thing for entrepreneurs. But I understand that it's much easier said than done when you're going through it. But if you get through it, it's a good story to tell. But when you're going through it, it's super uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, I love it. And it's cool that you have two other people that you know, the three of you guys can, when things get tough, you can sit down, you can put your heads down and strategize, which is wonderful. One of the other things that you shared on your, when I was kind of doing my creeping on your LinkedIn, you mentioned, like, as a founder, your job isn't only to build up a business, but also to build up your team. And I think it also goes into, so.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the interesting things that I'm having to evolve right now. And for so long, it was just myself and my co-founders doing everything. And we were just builders and creators. And that's really what inspires me, this idea of we're creating or building something from nothing. Like, literally, this didn't exist before. Now we've willed it into existence with our blood and our sweat and just our drive. But now you start hiring other people and they're not the founders, but they're still right now early enough on the team where they're really passionate about what we're doing. And as the company gets bigger and further away from the founding team, there'll be less and less of that most likely. But for us now, we're having to evolve. We're not just builders and creators. We're also managers of people, and people have lots of different personalities and people have their own emotional swings. They have good days. They have bad days. They have the things in their lives that are going on. Maybe their kid is sick. Maybe they're sick. One of our employees, her cat went missing. Luckily, she was found, but these are like external stressors that are weighing on the team. And at the same time, they have to be wondering, because we're a very brand new team, we've just hired them, and there's not a blueprint for what their job should be, because we're, again, creating something from nothing. And there's not like a path that they're supposed to follow. They're figuring it out. So I'm sure with that, there's some internal question of, am I doing a good job? Am I not doing a good job? Where can I be better? Where am I not doing well enough? And it's our responsibility now to understand what those things are and try to guide and coach the team, help to elevate their confidence, elevate their actual hard and soft skills, and just elevate their emotional state to keep them moving forward, keep them happy, and help them understand that they're doing great work. And that's really one of the most interesting things. And at first, a little bit challenging, because it kind of feels, when you're handing over the reins to something you've been doing for years, it's almost like, well, it's easier if I just do it. I can do it a lot faster. I already understand how to do it. But you have to take a step back and realize, when you're bringing on someone new, it might be slower in the very short term for them to figure it out, but it's way better for the company, including us, to have them figure it out, help them excel, and help them be excellent at that job. Because now, as the company scales up, there's not enough time in the day for the founders to be doing everything. And now that we've kind of settled into that role, I think that's one of the most rewarding things that we're seeing. I talked a lot about how we're changing our users' lives when they report in, but I love hearing the same thing from our own team. And they'll say things like, I've grown a lot just since I've been here, and I've understood ways like I have a more confident voice now, and people are posting about it. And we're so big on LinkedIn, and I remember two interviews in particular, two people said, no matter what, with this job, I'm not going to post on LinkedIn. It's just something I'm not going to do. And now they both post on LinkedIn every single day. We never asked them to, but they're excited to share like their experience at the company. So these are some things that are really rewarding, but also they're a new challenge for us because we haven't had to manage a team before, at least not a large team. We just had to manage our own work, but yeah. It's really a new rewarding thing for us.
And I hope it continues to last for you guys. It's funny too. A lot of companies can say as much as they want that, oh, our team is happy. But I honestly think one of the biggest testaments to a happy team are the people who are organically, natively sharing their experience. Because if you're kind of diving or you're checked out, you're going to do your job and that is it. Like I said, most of the stuff that I've seen about Lavender, I've seen it because not only of other people that talk about you guys as users, but also your team. I see your team all over my feed.
Megan on our team, she leads our user success efforts. I remember reading this one Sunday night. She made a post about how excited she was to go to work on Monday morning. Yeah. As a founder, that just blew my mind. I was so happy to read that post. Like to hear someone tell the world how excited they are to go to work on a Monday morning. Like we're doing something right. And that just got me so excited.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, when I think about Sunday scaries, which is a huge, like millennials deal with Sunday scaries. I worked in companies where I had crazy Sunday scaries because I hated the company. I didn't enjoy the work. I didn't feel empowered. I just did what I could do. And that's it. I did not do more. Now, you know, you're working in a brand where I don't have that. And it's wonderful that you feel that too from your team, which we see it, and you cannot, you can't fake authenticity. So absolutely love that. Last bit, and then I will actually let you go and you can get to work because I know you still have a bunch of work to do. We've got rapid fire questions. So first question, what is your most strongly held professional belief?
Give first. I think what's been a core pillar of our company and a core belief of the company is that if we give first of expectation in return, it's going to be better for everybody. And the reality is eventually it does come back to you. And just for example, giving our product away to students, job seekers, entrepreneurs, but giving first is something that's a core value I try to distribute to the entire team. Everyone on the team has a budget that they can use to give to our customers or to our larger community with nothing expected in return. You don't have to be a customer. You don't have to be paying us, be a user or anything. We just give first.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, even the conversation that we've already had, I think one of the main things that stands out is how much goodwill you guys have built for no other reason but to just do good. So I absolutely love that. Give first. What made you smile today?
I talked to one of my employees earlier, and similar to what I told you earlier, they were just telling me like how excited they were to be building our product, and they were really excited for like the next thing that they wanted to build. I heard it from multiple employees today. So like really just hearing that my employees were happy, that made me smile multiple times today.
Yeah, no, I love it.
And then also, it's my mom's birthday and I got her a massage chair and it came a little bit earlier. It's her birthday is on Friday and it came early and I've never seen my mom as excited about a gift ever. So that made me smile too.
Oh, I love that. Happy birthday, mom.
yeah, there you go.
And you totally, I believe you because when you were reminiscing, you were thinking about it and you were smiling. Love that. Yeah. What is your spirit fruit? If there's a fruit that could be you. Mm. And why?
I have no idea. I've never thought about that. I don't know. I think the first thing that came to mind was a kiwi. I like kiwis. But I don't know why it's my fruit. I don't have a good explanation or a good analogy, but I like kiwis.
Okay. Kiwis are great.
I'm not sure it's a spirit fruit, but that's a fruit that came to mind.
Now, I mean, most people have replied with like banana or strawberry, watermelon, because it's super, super funky and like very sweet. Okay,
I'm sure I could come up with some like reason, but I would just be grasping for straws.
You know what? We'll stick with kiwi because kiwi is a great fruit. Salty or sweet?
Ooh, sweet.
What's your favorite dessert?
Ice cream for sure.
Flavor.
All of them, even something as basic as vanilla, but if you can throw away any sort of chocolate in there, for sure. So like the Oreo types or like cookie dough, anything, but I love ice cream.
I love it. What was your last impulse buy?
My last impulse buy? I got my very first IV drip today. vitamin IV drip. I'm traveling tomorrow. It's going to be an extended trip. And I was like, I don't want to get sick. And I was like, I hear a bunch of people doing these like vitamin drips. I have no idea if they're legit or not, but I've got an hour in my day that's open and I scheduled one. I went and did it. Can't say I feel any different, but maybe tomorrow when I start this next leg of travel, hopefully my immune system is top notch.
Okay. Hey, yeah, I've heard about it. I wonder if it's right.
We'll see.
Do share with the community if it is posted on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Okay, mountain, beach, or city?
I love them all. That's the easy one for me. I love the mountains. I'm from the beach. I grew up on the beaches of Virginia. And I went to school in the mountains. I spent a lot of time at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. First started my first like real business in college. But the mountains, they bring me peace. I think I like the beach. I spent a year living in South Baja, Mexico. Most of Lavender was built while I was living there, which is on the Sea of Cortez, beautiful beach. Really love the beach. Brings a lot of peace as well. But I think, end of the day, the mountains are what I really love. But I live in New York as well. I think the cities are great for that hustle mentality, getting work done, having meetings. So I like all three. But if I had to say I'm going to retire to one, it'd probably be in the mountains.
So you're going to want to retire in Vancouver?
I hear it's beautiful. I really do. I spend a lot of time in Toronto. We're there every month, but never been to Vancouver or like the western parts. So, but I hear it's amazing.
Oh, it's if you love mountains and ocean and like good weather now that because of unfortunately global warming, the weather's getting better here. Vancouver is definitely your spot. Also, I was born in Toronto, so I'm very familiar with.
Okay.
Very similar to I always joke, I'm like Toronto is like the New York of Canada, but it's nothing like New York.
Yeah.
New York is like next level.
We film our Lavender Joe series in Toronto. So I'm there quite frequently. I like
it. Nice. Where'd you find Joe?
He goes back to Giving First. He's an actor, but before he became a full-time actor, he was in tech sales. So Lavender Joe used to be a Lavender Joe. He did all the things that he does now, but he did it in his real job. He's a full-time actor. He's currently in Japan filming a series there for Netflix Japan. And he's like a legit full-time actor. But how did I find him? How did that whole thing start? It goes back to Giving First. So on Fridays and sometimes on Thursdays, I'll set aside time for other entrepreneurs to book time on my calendar and ask me questions. I can help them. Like, we're not that far along, but I know people that were where I was 2 or 3 years ago are trying to get to where I am now. So I try to give back in that way. And there was an entrepreneur that took me up on that. She's based in Toronto. And I did my 1 hour or half hour like session with her. And we started following each other on LinkedIn. And she had posted a commercial that one of her friends had made, a guy named Rob. And I thought it was funny. It wasn't like over the top humorous, but it's like one of those things. I watched it and then I just chuckled. And I thought it was, kind of clever. So I emailed him, I cold emailed him and asked him about what it was like working with him. I had this idea to take bad emails and put it in real life. And we started going back and forth and did our first Lavender Joe series, and then people liked it. So we just kept doing it.
Gosh, thank you so much for sharing that. I absolutely love that. And so you do it every Fridays?
As my schedule permits. Like now it's not as much, but it used to be every Thursday and Friday. I'd block off a couple hours for it. Now it's I've been traveling a lot more recently, so it's harder to do it, but I try to do it as much as I can. And a lot of times founders will just like DM me and we'll schedule something when my calendar permits.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think you guys, so Lavender and Winter, those two, both of those brands are the two big ones where I figure you guys are doing video differently. Because Winter is doing something similar. They've got some hilarious commercials. So, I don't even know what it's called. The LinkedIn videos, whatever, the promos, video promos. You guys also, when I thought about two B2B brands who are actually doing video properly, and the reason why the LinkedIn laughing emoji exists is because of you and Winter. Love that.
I love that. Thanks.
Pet peeve.
It's some of the things that I'm trying to like be better about. We're really into like concise and clear communication in email. And I also like that in meetings. And what I've noticed is with newer employees, I actually did a TikTok on this. We had a very vulnerable conversation with one of my employees and she was quite new to the role. And she always would say things like, I'm sorry to bother you, or can I ask a question? Or do you have time for us to ask a question or things like that? And I always thought it was kind of ironic because if you're concerned about how much time you're taking up from someone, but then you're adding in things like, sorry to bother you, can I ask a question? And it just adds more time. But even outside of that, the reason we hired that person or hired any of our employees is because we want to hear from them. So it was kind of a pet peeve, but it was really a learning moment or a teaching moment to be like, you know, you don't have to ask me to ask a question. The reason we hired you is because we value your opinion, we value your ideas, and we want you to ask these questions and to contribute. And she told me privately that that was like really a change in her perspective of herself and of her role and how to interact with what she considers to be like more senior leadership. Although I think Will and I are still trying, we're still coming to grips with the fact that we're not just like a couple of founders anymore. We actually are managers. But I wouldn't say it's like a full pet peeve, but I do think people be mindful of like how they're communicating and not being afraid to like take up space in a conversation, because if you're in the room with that person, they want you there for some sort of reason. They want to hear your ideas.
It's cool that you guys, that you mentioned that to her, because I will say, speaking from the fact that I'm a female and I have other female friends, this actually ends up being something that a lot of us do. Yeah. And I was that in the very beginning, almost more apologetic for asking for time, even though it's like, and I actually was told a couple of times like, hey, 100%, you know, you don't have to. Yeah, I'm here to be asked. And it took me a while to break that habit. That was actually something that took me a while to unlearn. But it ends up being, it's like a common issue that a lot of women have, especially when you're moving up into more leadership positions. You realize, no, I have full authority to be here. I need to push back. I'm not going to say yes to everything. If I need something from someone, I'm going to go and I'm going to say it. So I love that you shared that with her and she had that epiphany.
She had a very similar comment on it as well. Just like from her perspective as a woman and being, in her words, allowed to take up space in that way. And I never thought about it from that perspective, but I just knew that we hired someone we thought was really smart and we wanted to hear her opinions more often.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, now you know, this is the second person, the second female to tell you that. So definitely continue to like hit home on that when you're working with other women, because it is definitely a common issue from my experience. And it sounds like from hers too. What title would you give this chapter of your life if you had a book?
Unbelievable. It's just quite wild. I've had two people recently ask me, they're like, have you ever just like taken a step back and thought about what's happening? Because so many different things are happening. Like I'm traveling all the time. We have events all over the country, back and forth filming commercials in Canada. We're hiring people. We're raising venture capital. These are all the things that I've dreamed about for the past decade. And now they're actually happening. And I look back on like all the early days of my first sales job, working at a startup, like nonstop, just calling and calling and calling, cold calls after cold calls to build that business. And then like quitting my job with no money saved to do my first startup that I'm having a little e-commerce store to pay the bills to keep the other startup alive and like all the sacrifices along the way. And now it's like finally here, the point that we've been working for so long, both together and independently, it's finally here. And like all these crazy things are happening, all these different experiences. We're meeting all these people that 6 months ago are people we looked up to. And now we're talking to them as we're getting introduced to them and they're like our peers now. It's really a crazy experience to be going through. So I would call this chapter just unbelievable. But outside of that, it's like the scale up period. It's kind of like in the movie 8 Mile with Eminem. It's like, you got one shot. Do you capture it or let it slip? Like we are doing the best that we can to not let this slip because we realize we've got a really great opportunity in front of us.
Yeah, it kind of goes back into the other thing you mentioned. Failure is not an option. We'll do whatever, but failure is just not on the table. I love that.
Yeah, we've come, it's a quote I've heard and I love, like we've come too far to only come this far. So
you got to keep going. I actually have not heard that before. Yeah. Nice. We're added to my little quote book, favorite quotes. Last question, and then I can let you get back to work.
Yeah.
Who inspires you? Who are the people that that have inspired you the most in this journey?
Yeah, I think outside of my family, who I think sacrificed a lot for me growing up, and I always have really respected that. And I think it's part of the way that I've been able to know that we're sacrificing and working really hard. And I think family for one, if I had to, like, I think back to what you're probably thinking about, which are like, who are the business people or people in our space that have inspired me the most? There's a few. One of the very first was Richard Branson when I was in college. I was really inspired by the fact that he did a lot of things. Like, he did a lot of businesses that didn't seem connected. Like, he had a record label, he had the airlines, he had rocket ships, et cetera. And I always found that really fascinating that he was able to build businesses that aligned with whatever he was interested in at that time. I think that's when I realized that I could eventually build a business. Even when I was in college, like, I kind of knew I don't have to just go build a business to build a business. I can build a business that is alongside something that I personally am interested in. And that was a really interesting thing for me to learn at a pretty young age. And then if I think more about, like, things, people have inspired specific parts of what we've done. This guy, Raul, he's the founder of a company called Superhuman. And previously he was the founder of a company called Reportive, which is acquired by LinkedIn. One time I saw him give a speech about how personal the inbox is and how intimate it is. And that really changed the way I thought through product design. And we've spent, like, hours debating millimeter changes in our product, all because I listened to him talk about how intimate of an experience an inbox is, that every inefficiency is magnified throughout the day. And another big one was Evan Spiegel, the founder of Snapchat. I watched a talk that he did years ago about how he designed Snapchat to be in three main screens and just for super simple usability. And we did something very similar with Lavender, thinking through your personalization assistant and your email assistant and kind of umbrelling the features around that. So I think those are three people that have inspired me in business, at least, and in product design in different ways. But there's been so many more as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a wonderful, perfect way to wrap up this show, I think, this entire conversation. So thank you for staying on for as long as you did. It kind of proves, I think, when I think about why Lavender was successful, this entire conversation has showed me that you, and this last point you just mentioned, obsession over product, obsession over people, which is your team, and then obsession over your users beyond just getting them to adopt Lavender to the point where you are obsessed with them and their success for that, you know, the actual impact that you're making well beyond their work life and their experience using their inbox. And I think that is the thing that sets the greatest businesses in the world apart from the good businesses and the ones that are successful, because you are able to basically obsess over all three of those. Again, making this larger than life, making this way more impactful than, again, the one-to-one experience on the inbox, which, again, you guys still managed to obsess over that. But absolutely, this was a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And any last words for the marketers who are listening to this?
I just want to say, like, we're not successful yet. We've got a long way to go, but I do appreciate all those kind words and appreciate our users using the product. If you want to find us, we're just at lavender.ai on Instagram and on TikTok. We're at It's Lavender Duh and Lavender HQ on Twitter. But I think for the marketers out there, there's like a new world of marketing happening, and people are calling it the consumerization of B2B, but it's really not that. The consumer never left. The consumer was always in B2B. So when we think about marketing, we think, what does our user want to do when they're not at their 9-to-5? They want to be scrolling on TikTok or Instagram or looking at memes, doing fun, funny things, sending funny things to their group chats and stuff. So let's bring that into their 9-to-5, a place that's traditionally boring and stuffy where they don't really want to be, and bring this joy they're getting outside of their 9-to-5, but put a workplace spin on it and put it in their LinkedIn feed. And I think just thinking of the B2B as really B2C has been a key component of how we've thought through marketing. It's always about being helpful and informative, but also being creative, entertaining, and different.
Yeah. And you guys are killing that. Again, I want to continue to see purple on my feed because it's actually working a lot of my joy. And thank you again, Will. Thank you. A huge shout out again to Ton. Thank you for making this happen. This was an amazing episode. And I say this to everyone. It sounds kind of creepy, but once you join Growth Marketing Camp, we're like a cult. You can't get out. We're going to make sure that we absolutely repurpose everything you shared and share all the value with people in every front that we can. But I'm going to say, I think this is definitely in my top three favorite founder story that I've done. So thank you so much again, Will.
Well, send me the other two that are in the top three. I'd love to listen to them. But I appreciate you having me, and thanks for all the kind words.
Thanks for listening to Growth Marketing Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you would give it a quick 5-star rating or share it with a friend or colleague looking to strengthen their skills with tips and inspiration. If you want to learn more about the company behind the show, head to opensense.com. That's OPENSENSE.com. We'll catch you on the next episode.